Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Super Coach. Our topic for today is performance excellence. And I have a very special guest who will be joining me for the show, Anders Haglund. Anders was he was actually a European Tour golf champion and went on to become one of the top performance coaches and speakers in Sweden. And somewhere along the way, we met up and we started working together. And I will let him share the story of how learning what I talk about on this show messed up his career for a little while. And how hopefully now it's made a difference as he's become one of the leading practitioners of the principles and the inside out understanding in Europe, and particularly in the field of performance excellence. So we will be taking calls, but we'll take them later in the show. But if you want to get in the queue, you can listen to the show while you can listen to the show too, but it's not going to say much. You can listen to the show while you're on hold by calling 866-254-1579. So if you've got some questions about performance that you're going to want to ask, toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. And then from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And I'm very excited. I want to share. I'm probably going to do this three times because I'm going to hold myself back from doing it six times. I did a TED Talk back in April in Bend, Oregon. It was really exciting. Is got to share a stage with an astronaut who's working on manned missions to Mars, and amazing dancers and improvisers and musicians, and Bob Hurley, who created the Hurley Surf Company, which is this $200 million company. And he's just like a surfer guy. Like I actually asked him when we were, before we went on, I said, like, what's your secret, you know, to success? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like Mr. Magoo, man. I just kind of keep walking forward and stuff happens. And, you know, he was partly, being very modest, and partly I could see that there's an element of, when you just show up from a good place and go in the direction of what you really want to be doing, really good things happen. So you can check that out by going to my site, supercoach.com. It's right there on the front page. And I hope after the show, you'll take the time, 14 minutes and 8 seconds, in fact, to go do that. But in a moment, let me bring on Anders, and let me make sure this actually works because we haven't actually checked. Anders, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Brilliant. It actually worked. How about that? So so the reason that I asked Anders onto the show today is it's twofold. He is one of two or three people in the world of what I know who are using the inside out understanding at a really high level with top athletes and performers in a variety of fields. Another is Garrett Kramer, who's been a guest of the show. And another is Jamie Smart in the UK, who's doing some stuff. So I just thought that this might go well as a conversation. Anders, I thought as a way of kicking off the conversation, if you'd be willing to share a bit of your story, both as an athlete, but then as a coach, and how sort of the inside understanding and kind of coming across the principles shifted the way you do what you do.
Okay, sure. Well, I started out, as you said, as a golf professional, and had the dream of course, like everybody else when you're little, I dreamt about being the best in the world. And I got to the place where I became the European champion and did the best I could with all the stuff that we had available, trying mental training techniques and kind of realizing when I was there, somebody had me relax on the floor and getting really, really relaxed and then squeezing my hand. And then I'm supposed to squeeze my hand again when I felt nervous to make my nervousness go away. And I kind of started by questioning them and saying, I don't really want to be that relaxed if I'm in that situation, so why am I practicing this? And they didn't like the question, but I kept exploring and finding out new stuff. And as you said, I met you, and we all have somebody, I think, that we thank for pointing us in the direction of the principles. And it was back in 2009 or 2010 that you and I had the conversation, and you asked what I wanted to do, if I wanted to redecorate my little egg and make it better, if I wanted to hatch. And I was, you know, I immediately said I want to hatch, and from there then on, I was into the principles, but I had no idea what to do with it because it so totally clashed with everything I had done before. I had all my brave tools and techniques and nowhere to use them now. So it took a while before I kind of got back on track, and but it's been a wonderful journey, and, you know, thank you.
Oh, no, I mean, thank you. It's been an absolute privilege and a treat. And now I'm going to share a story, and I'm going to share it the way I remember it, and then you can tell people the truth of what really happened. So when Anders came to me for coaching, he said, look, I'd love to learn this for myself. I can see that this is really useful. And you guys listen to the show. You know that just beginning to see anything about thought and how thought works, about consciousness and the nature of consciousness, about how the mind works, it makes a difference, right? But so he said, well, you know, I'd love that, but don't mess with my coaching. I'm very successful in my coaching. And so I was like, fine, you know, that's all right. And secretly laughing in my head, like he's going to be able to learn this and it's not going to change everything in his life. And then you sent me a text, and I was in an airport on my way somewhere wild, like Australia. And the text just said, the butterfly has landed.
Yeah.
And I smiled because I knew that feeling that when you get an insight, when you see something about the truth of how the mind really works and how our experience really is created, it is like that. It's like this miracle of a butterfly landing on you. It's kind of in a way nothing to do with you, but it's magical. And then I got a confessional phone call that one of your golfers had, you decided to try it with one of your golfers, and he just won the Indian Open and was off to the US Open. So I don't know how much of that I've embellished and how much of that is how it happened, but I'd love to hear your version of that.
Well, actually, that's pretty spot on. When I saw that, it was unbelievable how I used the metaphor when doing seminars and stuff about the fact that the first guy who found out that the earth was round must have felt a little bit sheepish right after, because he must have looked out and gone, sun is round, moon is round, seems like the default setting in the universe is round. How could I have missed this? And that's exactly the way I felt. I was like, oh, I tried that technique and it worked, seemingly. And I tried the same technique the day after and it didn't work. And I still thought it was the technique. And all of a sudden, and that, as you said, when I said the butterflies landed, all of a sudden I realized I've been looking in the wrong direction. I've been trying all this stuff, and I didn't realize that was actually in the way. So I started, I did a fun thing. I started finding people who had broken world records. And this is not an extensive scientific study, but I found enough people to find it fun to ask them what was going on when they were actually breaking the world record, because I thought it was fascinating, since they didn't only outperform themselves, they outperformed every other human being on the planet. And what kind of shocked me, or after doing the having the insight, it didn't quite shock me, but it would really shock me before, was that none of them said that they were thinking positive while that was going on. They all said a version of either it was like I wasn't thinking at all, or they said it was like I was thinking what I'm normally thinking, but it was like I wasn't taking it seriously and I did my best anyway. Mm-hmm. But none of them said any of the stuff of I feel calm, I feel relaxed, I feel excited but not tense, I accept myself no matter what the result, and all the stuff that I had read in books that I thought world champion were walking around doing and that I failed miserably at trying to do it myself.
Yeah.
And so that was a revelation, finding out that it was that positive thinking could actually be in the way. That was unheard of for me, the fact that it was the amount of thinking going on and walking around telling yourself inside your head, I'm the best and I'm the world champion, I can do this. And you keep that up enough, not only is it tiresome, but you're not present enough to perform at anything.
Well, and I have used the analogy before of a race car driver who, you know, their negative thinking is like the car being filled up with red balloons, and they're trying to drive on this race car and they can barely see because there's so many red balloons filling up the car and blocking the windscreen. And somebody yeah. comes along and says, you need to be more positive. So they replace all the red balloons with blue balloons. You know, the car's still not going to do well.
No, it's just something about the principles. Once you see them, it's like it's almost like you've been there trying to open a jar by twisting the lid clockwise and really straining, and all you can do is either getting it stuck harder or breaking the jar. Mm. And somebody comes along and says, "Have you tried the other way?" and that was really eye-opening for me, and especially understanding, and this has been like the biggest insight for me the last year, has been that the zone that everybody's looking for, that place where everything is effortless and just flows, is not something you can construct. It's the place where you're born. Mm. So it's a removal of stuff rather than an adding of stuff to get there, because you're already there. And that... that getting to all the good stuff that I think all of us want, the feeling of compassion and being in the zone and all the good stuff, is actually a non-active thing. But on the other hand, getting the results in the world that we have made up is better than other things. That takes activity. So most people think they have to be as active to kind of reach being happy or something, and that is actually a non-active place. So doubt you have to kind of work at by judging and thinking, but having faith is what you have when you're not doing that.
Now, let me ask you, if somebody's listening and they're new to the show, I don't yeah. know why you'd be new to the show, but if you are new to the show, welcome. But if somebody's listening and they're new to the show, this is always the impossible question that everyone always puts us on the spot and goes, well, what are the three principles? But
oh, wow.
But Anders Hägglund, yeah. what are yeah. the three principles?
Well, to me, having an engineering background, because what I was educated as before being golf professional, rather it was to please my mom, who thought if I want to be a golf professional, at least you have to have something to fall back on. But with an engineering background, the principles to me are the same as the principles for everything else in the universe, how quantum mechanics and gravity and all those stuff. If you know about how something really works, something becomes easier, and especially you become less superstitious. And the principles of what everybody says is mind, consciousness, and thought, which is just words until you realize that it's what we build every experience of our life with. But that the formless coming into form, just like quantum mechanics now know that all the dark matter and the dark energy is what actually makes everything up, is from nothing to something, and we all get lost in this, but it's the three principles is what makes everything else possible, and it's what's going on no matter if you know about it or not, which is why it's so magical to find out about it. To me, I even today with a client, and he found out about this for the first time, and he kind of got wide-eyed and looked at me and said, this is almost like if an alien came from another planet, and obviously they'd be more advanced in their knowledge of the universe, and since they can get here, they would look at us going like, I'm almost a god here. And knowing this and just how I relate to other people, when I realize that my feelings are coming from the quality of my thinking and not from the outside, that's like having like a, you know, superior knowledge or an unfair advantage. This is going to be good for me. I could just see him feeling all the power, and we had to get him back to humble. But it's almost, to me, when that butterfly landed, it was almost that feeling of a sense of, oh, finally everything makes sense. I understand how things kind of get there. And even when I get lost, I'm not down on myself because I understand where it's coming from. And the three principles of mind, consciousness, and thought kind of explains how we all, via our thought, lets our consciousness bring to life so that we can have the experience of life almost like we're painting it outside of us, which, just like the moon and the sun being round, to me it was like, oh, Oh, now I know why one time my wife can come home and be what I thought was irritating, and I got irritated. And I knew that must be a connection there. And all of a sudden, I realized 3 days later, she can come home and be even more irritating, and I all of a sudden become compassionate and loving because I can see the pain behind her behavior. And it was only when I realized how I created my world through thought that I realized, oh, now I can see it. Before I was sure, but if I can get compassionate one time and irritated the other, it can't come from her, it's coming from me. And that was, well, it was kind of a sheepish thing to realize that I've been putting it on her and it's coming from me, God.
Oh, I mean, you know, sheepish is, I've gone through embarrassed, humbled and humiliated sometimes overlap for me, because the default is that we really think, you know, no, it's them. It's what they're doing. It's that. And we just miss the fact that in a different space, when we're settled down, when our minds are a bit quieter, when for whatever reason, we're in a different state of mind, the exact same things can happen. The exact same behaviors can show up. And we just don't experience them as difficult. And now, for me, one of the things that's so exciting about that is that it reveals what gets in the way of our performing at our best.
Yeah.
So I'm a coach. You're a coach. We both came to this with a sort of a bent towards performance and results.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, I say in the TED Talk, did I mention I did a TED Talk? You can find it at supercoach.com. I lied.
May I say that it's really good?
Thank you. Yes, you may. It just came out. I'm allowed to be excited. One of the things, you know, I say in the TED Talk, it's called Why Aren't We Awesomer? And one of the things that was so excited about seeing this for me is people, when sort of left to their own devices, when they quiet down, when they settle down inside themselves, they do really well. You know, I've always known that. I've always known that at my best, I'm going to do really well. And I've seen it about people for years, that when they're at their best, they do really well. But the problem is, most of us are at our best so little of the time. And for me, the missing link, the thing that the principles showed, that seeing the nature of thought, that we get, you know, our minds get filled with all these different thoughts, and then we live in the experience of all that thinking, and it all looks real, and it looks like we have to reckon with it and deal with it and do stuff about it. When in fact, the moment we settle back down, if there's anything to be done, it becomes obvious to me. It becomes almost common sense. And most of the time, there's not really even anything to be done.
No, totally agree. If I would compare the way I coached before I got to know about this and how it is now, before I went straight for performance, and quite a few times performance went up, but very seldom satisfaction and feeling better came with it. And now I basically talk about the principles, they feel better, and having better performance is almost like a cool side effect.
Yeah, you know, we had Garrett on the show, Garrett Kramer, and I remember him saying he was meeting with an NFL executive, the National Football League, and the executive saw him make a presentation on the principles and said, well, this is very interesting, but, you know, it seems to me that if I hire you to work with my field goal kicker, and that when the game is on the line, you know, the work he does with you should guarantee that he's going to make that kick. And yeah. Garrett said, well, I don't see that as my job. He said, I see my job as making sure that your field goal kicker knows that his quality of life will be no different at all based on whether or not he makes that kick. And if he really gets that, chances are he'll go up to that kick without too much on his mind. And chances are, if he's a good field goal kicker, he'll make the kick. But yeah, that's a different goal than I got to make the kick.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up the difference for me as well, is showing that there's an understanding of where it comes from, and all of a sudden you're not as dependent on where you are. Whereas before, it almost everybody felt like, I have to be in the right place, I have to have the perfect feeling, or otherwise I can't perform. Now it's more like, oh, I'm nervous, but I don't have to do anything about nervous. I just have to know what usually happens when I'm nervous. I love the description that Jack Nicklaus is still like the greatest golfer of all time, and Tiger Woods is trying to catch him. He described how he was so nervous on the last hole, trying to win the U.S. Open, needing a par on the last hole, that he couldn't get quite the ball to sit right on the tee peg. And he walked up to his then caddy, and he said, God, I'm really nervous. I have to remember to complete the backswing, because I usually get quick when I'm this nervous. But there was nowhere where he said, I have to be not nervous because I don't like being nervous. It was more like, oh, I'm really nervous, and when I'm nervous, I get quick, so I'll make sure to complete the backswing. And that was it. There was nothing to do about nervousness, and I just thought that was kind of showed why he's the greatest of all time, even though you probably haven't heard about the three principles. It just showed that knowing of, you don't have to fix it, you just have to know what's going on.
And of course, in my conversations with athletes at peak performers, one of the things that they'll often say is they're nervous right up until the moment they're in performance.
Yeah.
So they're sitting there and they're, sometimes they're throwing up. I mean, there was actually, I mentioned this, but when we were doing we were backstage at the TED Talk, and there were four of us. There was the surfer, there was the astronaut, there was a beekeeper, and there was me. And we were having a conversation about, performance nerves. And the beekeeper was kind of like, yeah, I feel really nauseous. I'm worried I might throw up. And the astronaut was like, yeah, I threw up before every launch. And, you have to do it before you get the helmet on, or it's really messy. And the surfer's like, oh, yeah, we throw up before, before any big surf. And even I was in there, and I just do this so often that I don't have a lot of thinking about it, and I don't have a lot of nerves around it. But it was really interesting to me to see these two guys who are just absolutely peak performers in their fields, who being nervous and throwing up wasn't a problem at all. Like it wasn't even something that they would waste a single moment thinking about. It's just like, throw up and get back out there. And I loved that, because we do have this cultural thing that we're never supposed to feel those things. That if we were really confident, then we could just do everything without any nerves. And it's true and it's not true. What happens is that when you are in the flow of performance, when your attention isn't on you, you do drop into that natural flow state. And that's what Anders and I, by the way, haven't said this, but we're going to be talking about this live for the first time in Sweden, in Gothenburg, Sweden, on the, I'm going to try here, the 24th of August. How'd I do?
Yeah.
Yes, the 24th of August. And if you want to learn about that, if you want to come see us, go to supercoach.com/performance. And that'll take you to Anders' page. If you want to learn more about Anders and what he does, go to lifevision.se, or you can follow him on Twitter at Anders Haglund. And let's go to the phones. Let's go to Amherst, Massachusetts, and let's speak with Susan. Susan, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. First, I wanted to say I'm a first-time listener.
Ah, welcome. Welcome.
You said you were hoping nobody was, but I am.
Ah, there you go. It's okay. They always let them in. We tell them to keep them out, but you're probably cute, and the bouncers just went, no, she's cute. She can come in.
I bribed them. So here I am. So I'm not really sure how to frame my question, because I haven't listened to the show before. But basically, I wanted to know how you can create something, through your thoughts, like a better job or something like that, when you don't know what you want to do. And you, even in your quiet moments, you don't get the sign or a signal or a ping or a whatever you want to call it. Then what do you do?
Cool. I feel I should defer to the guest. Anders, do you want to jump in?
Well,
yeah, sure.
Okay. To me, it's a little bit like when we let it go and we know we want to find out, we have it on our minds that, hey, I want to know what I'm going to do. And then when we let go and we say, oh, I have my quiet time now, we sit there and we almost try to watch for it. So it's almost like a little bit of a conditional thing. Okay, I've been quiet now for 10 minutes. How come nothing's come? I don't know if you can relate to that, but it's almost like we have to take a peek all the time. Almost like when we were little and we had a little, you know, sore and a scab and we had to put the nail underneath to see if it healed.
Right.
and we kept it from healing just because we had to keep checking. And to me, it's understanding that it's what's the formless is always there behind all that. And when we have the trust and faith to let it be for a while, it will come. It will come. It's always going to be when we least check for it. That's my experience anyway. It has been that the magical moments of our lives are very seldom planned. It's usually when we expect it the least that we meet that certain, you know, special someone or get that insight where we just go, I know. But the most important part is, in the meantime, not sitting around waiting, but doing the best we can with what we have at the moment. And while we're doing it, just like with my athletes, some of them say, I can't go into the football field and, you know, wait for the right feeling and sit there at the corner and go, I kind of have to do something.
So it would be really good television if they did.
Yeah, it would. It would look good, wouldn't it? Everybody's sitting there waiting for the feeling and the ball just sitting there.
Yeah, if the Tibetan national team ever actually made the World Cup, that's what we'd get.
That's what they get because they've been coached by me, right? No.
Yeah.
But it's getting in the game and doing the best you can with what you have and realize that the quiet moments don't have to be passive moments.
Okay.
Let me come at it from a slightly different perspective, because I think what Andrew said is absolutely right, that, you know, we think we're waiting for insight, but the problem is we're waiting for insight, you know, and there's a lot of weight in that waiting. And so it's not really that we don't have it on our minds. It's even more on our minds because we're trying not to think about it because we're trying to wait for it.
Yeah.
But at the risk of being a little bit forward, are you married, Susan?
No.
So if you were going to get married, would you want to marry someone that you had never dated?
No, obviously.
Okay.
No.
Now, if you were going to date somebody, would you want to date somebody you'd never flirted with?
No.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? Certainly not on any sort of a long-term basis. So it seems to me, kind of like Anders was saying about, well, the sun is round and the moon is round, so I guess it's not a leap to kind of think that maybe the earth is round too, that if you'd flirt before you date and you date before you got engaged and you might get engaged before you got married, that you're not going to suddenly find your dream job in your head.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think that sometimes because we sort of hear about the power of the mind and we recognize that our thoughts have a lot of power to make things easier, make things appear harder, to create our experience, we think that we're supposed to think our lives into being on purpose instead of that just being a description of what goes on. And so if it was okay with you, if it was okay for you, excuse me, not with you, but if it was okay for you to flirt with a few things before you found your perfect next step, is there anything that occurs to you that might be fun to flirt with?
Not really, and that's the issue.
Okay.
I don't know how many ways can I say that. Not really. I've been told by other people things that I should flirt with, quote unquote.
Okay.
But that just annoys me.
Okay. So,
tell me what I should flirt with.
Yeah, no, it's the expression. It's like teaching a pig to sing. It doesn't work and it annoys the pig.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. Am I the pig in this scenario?
I don't know. I just throw the analogies out. Don't actually listen to them, for God's sake. That's okay. The problem with first-time listeners. Bob, who let her in here? Okay, we're fine. We're fine. So here's an interesting thing. So putting aside what everybody else wants for Susan. And even putting aside for a moment what Susan wants for Susan, does it make sense to you that your enjoyment of life is at least partly, and I'm going to suggest actually entirely, but at least partly a function of your state of mind as opposed to of what you're actually doing?
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. So if you can see that your the quality of your experience is really not going to be so much dependent on what you're doing as the state of mind in which you are doing it, what if it didn't matter so much what you did?
Oh, I don't know. The only thing I would think of if it didn't matter what I did was trying to, I don't know, be sort of like a guide or help people. People always come to me for advice. I don't know why.
So maybe
something along that line.
So I'm gonna stop us here because I don't want you to get prematurely practical.
Yeah.
But could you feel how when I asked that question? And when you thought about what it would be like if it didn't really matter, because it doesn't, because your experience of life doesn't come from your job. Your experience of your job doesn't even come from your job. It comes from your own state of mind, which is your own thoughts brought to life by consciousness. Mm-hmm. Did you feel how suddenly something opened up?
Yeah, I did.
So stay with that. Don't okay. worry about what comes through. Stay with that sense of opening and see what comes through that space. And I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised over the next few days at the new thoughts and new ideas that start to come through.
Okay, I trust you.
There you go.
Cool.
Welcome to our world. Thank you, Susan.
All righty, I'll be back.
Okay, great. And Anders, I don't know about you, but I think so often that I have to track conversations upstream. So somebody will come, you know, and they'll have a question that within their frame of reference makes a lot of sense. Like, okay, how do I make sure that I make every shot? Or how do I make sure that I'm going to win the game? Or how do I make sure that I'm going to get this job that I'm interviewing for? And until you go all the way back to the fundamental misunderstanding that they think if they make the shot, if they win the game, if they get the job, then they'll be happy or safe or okay or not a loser or whatever that connection they've made in their thinking is. Until you question that, there's no room for anything new to come through.
No, it's exactly that. Usually they have a really hard time hearing something new before that moment because everything sounds to them like either something they heard before or something that is just not workable for them.
I know. It's quite funny. I was talking to one of my mentees, one of the coaches I work with, and we were talking about how cool it would be if when people weren't in a place to hear something new, their ears literally weren't there. And then when they were in a quieter space, their ears would grow. So you could kind of see on the outside whether somebody had the ears to hear.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what's interesting in coaching people around performance is it's often the same thing that drives them to come to you for coaching that's getting in the way of their own best performance.
I can't even tell how many times I've had to almost put it on the line by saying that if you've had the same problem for a longer period of time, because usually when they seek out people like you and me, you charge a bit of money for helping out. They don't do that after having the problem for a week. Usually they throw everything in the kitchen sink on it themselves first. And when I tell them that if you had the same problem for a year or more, and the only thing that's happened is that it's getting worse, whatever you think is the solution is actually the problem. Mm. And that kind of stops them in their tracks. They go like, what? And I decide and say, here's what it sounds to me that you think is the solution to this. And I think you should take a little look and see if that couldn't be the actual problem.
Now, let me ask you this, because this just occurs to me that might be interesting for people to hear.
Yeah.
And I haven't talked to you about this ahead of time, so I'll ramble as I do it to give you time to kind of gather your thoughts. But it would be great to hear a story of an athlete that you've worked with and how their performance was positively impacted by what they saw. And then maybe somebody in business, somebody who isn't an athlete, but how their performance in business was impacted. Could you think of a couple of...
Sure. I'm actually, the one that comes to mind for me would be the business example first.
Great, yeah.
Because I had a CEO of a rather large company who got recommended to come to me because his stress levels were through the roof, and his doctors basically told him that he was walking heart attack with the stats that he came out with. And the reason being for him when he came to me was the fact that an American venture company of some sort had bought his whole company for a large amount of money, but the only thing they wanted to do was for them to buy another company and get them together and get synergy effects and then put it as an IPO and getting on the stock market and then bring the money back. And they had a very short horizon on that. So they had already brought him like 11 different companies out in Europe, which he had to go through all of them to find out which one would be the better fit. And he had to do the regular work as well. So now he's...
Well, I'm already completely lost, so I don't know how he did it. But yeah, okay,
sure. He was like, you know, he was totally out there. So anyway, we had a talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, the situation is not what's causing the stress. It's your thinking about it, and you have a little bit too much of it. So he goes back to his team, and he tells me, and this is like on the third coaching session, he tells me that I feel so much more relaxed, I'm finally sleeping again. I told the rest of the team this and told them, you're off the hook, take it easy. When the ideas come, we'll do something with them. And it turns out, a couple of months later, he knocks on my door, and you can tell, you know, that I think everybody out there listening has seen this, when somebody is so busy in their mind that the light is on, but there's nobody home, you can't really get to them. So I asked him, I said, you don't look very coachable today. And he said, no, I don't even know why I came here. And I said, well, your flight is not, you know, going back for a while, so maybe we could just talk. And I said, what's going on? And he said, well, somebody in my leadership group leaked to the Americans that because of us being relaxed about it, we have done now in 3 months what we thought would take 9 months, and we only have two candidates left, and we thought we could coast the last piece of the, you know, getting to the decision, and they leaked it. So the Americans came back and said they want the decision in 2 weeks, and now I can't sleep again, now I'm stressed again, now all this is going on. So we started talking about just about anything, and as you know, I was only looking for that place where you could see that, oh, he's here again, the light is on. And all of a sudden, 35 minutes into our discussion about kids and football and anything, I could see his shoulders go down. And I asked him, you look a bit more coachable now. And he said, yeah, I feel better, actually. So I said, what do you want to talk about? And he said, I don't know. And I was kind of shocked because I looked at him and said, what about the problem you came in with? And he said, no, I don't need to talk about that, actually. And I said, why? He said, I don't know what happened, but, you know, you coached me before and I got clear. And all of a sudden I realized if these two companies are so close to each other that I haven't been able to separate them through, you know, all the nights of sleeplessness, it actually doesn't matter which one I pick, and this one feels better. And he said afterwards, when I asked him about 6 months down the line, I think this could be an insight for people, is I asked him, what is your biggest insight through our process here? And he said, I think my best insight is that I've never made a good decision. And I was like, 6 months and you have a big company and the best thing you got out of this is that you've never made good decisions. But his next words were, because all my best decisions has never felt like decisions. He said, they always, anytime I have to start the process of going plus and minus and do all that stuff, it really feels like a decision to me. but then nothing really good comes out of it. And all of my best decisions through my career has always been like that moment when I just knew that if we spend so much time with these two companies and can't separate them, you know, you can just go with it. And he said that was my insight. And I think we all have that when we struggle with anything, is that the feeling of struggle is just telling us that we have too much thinking about it. And as soon as that settles down, new thought will come through. And all of a sudden, something that looked impossible will look simple.
I think that's brilliant. I've done some shows on decisions recently, and I remember one of the things that came up a lot is that you know, people think, oh man, I've got to get better at decision making, but in fact, we make thousands of decisions every day without thinking about it, and it's only the one or two that we have to think about that we think of as decisions. And if you suddenly realize, oh, that's just telling me I don't know, and I've got, as you say, I've got too much thinking about it, then suddenly, instead of trying to get better at decision-making, the fact that it feels like there's a decision to make is letting you know what the problem is.
Yeah, and that was, he actually taught me a bit by telling me that, because it was, I thought it was a brilliant insight, because it kind of shocked me at first when he said, I've never made any good decisions, and then he said, because all my best decisions, and he said, that served me so well ever since, because all my team and myself, we've made so much better decisions, because every time we start thinking about it, we just know.
Yeah.
And me and my wife has this thing, and I don't know if this is relatable to big corporate decisions, but when we go shopping together, and I call her out and say, what do you think about this, hon? And I have a jacket on or something on. She just looks at me and says, well, to be honest, it's not 100%, because when it is, you already bought it, and then you show me. And when you ask me, you're just trying to make me justify it.
Yeah.
So then I know, and I just have to hang it back, because, you know, it's, when you know, you're just standing there paying for it. And when you don't know, you're trying to like, well, maybe, you know, and we use it to think we can feel better through it instead of realizing we always know. And when we actually know, it doesn't feel like a decision. It just becomes like a no-brainer that we don't think about that much.
Yeah. So what about for sport?
Well, for sport, I've had so many stories. It's hard to pick one, but I know of a hockey player that I helped that had all kinds of superstitions. Among other things, he had to be the last out on the ice, and he had to have his right skate untied before he, you know, because if he didn't, he would have a problem. And we sat down and had a discussion about the fact that his thinking isn't true just because he's thinking it, and the fact that he has strong feelings with his thinking is not telling him, it's not confirming his thinking, it's actually disqualifying his thinking. And he was like, what? Well, everything we talk about, it sounds like you're thinking, I feel so strongly, I must be right. There must be something to it, or at least there can't be smoke without a fire. So if I have a strong feeling in my gut, there's got to be something to it. So every time he would put on a sock and he got to be thinking about, did I do that on the right foot first or left foot first? A lot of superstitious athletes out there. And all of a sudden he sat down and said, so you mean that bad feeling is not telling me that, oh, I need to do the other sock. It's telling me that I'm out to lunch with my thinking. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying. And he came back to me the week after, and he had played the game of his life. His coach was happy, and I thought the cutest thing was that he said, I helped my girlfriend because she was afraid of spiders, and I told her about what you said, but I couldn't remember what you said, so I said what I got out of it, and she looked at me astonished, and now she can, you know, bring the spider out herself. And all from just understanding the fact that the strong feeling you have is not intuition, because a lot of people think that strong feeling is intuition. And now with this understanding, I've always had the good intuition is almost like decisions. It's a very effortless feeling. It's not a strong feeling. When it's a strong feeling, it just means I'm thinking too much about it.
Well, and it's interesting. My version of that is I was at one point working with two different coaches, one of whom taught this way, and one of whom was a much more traditional performance coach. And it got very confusing after a while because they were literally pointing me in two different directions for the source of great performance. And I said to the principles-based coach, the inside-out coach, you know, I said, why is it that I come away from my sessions with this other coach and I feel like really excited and energized and I come away from our sessions and sometimes I just feel a bit like, yeah, that's good. You know, a bit flat almost. And he said, I'm not sure that excited feeling means what you think it means. And it took me a couple of years to realize exactly what he meant by that. And it's what you're talking about, that I had taken that sort of almost like enervated, adrenaline, hyped up feeling as being, this is the right direction. When in fact, it just meant my thinking was all wound up. It was wound up with blue balloons, not red balloons.
Yeah.
But it was wound up tight. And it was a kind of a driven excitement. And when I was with the other coach, I kind of spent more time in relaxed curiosity. And it was really surprising to me, because of everything I'd read about performance and thought about performance, that all of my best work happens in that relaxed, curious place. And pretty much none of it happens in that driven excitement place.
Yeah, and that is going right back to what we talked about performance and everything, is that any time somebody actually performs at their absolute top, where they almost say that, I performed better than my actual potential or whatever they tried to say, any time they do that, they say it felt effortless, it felt easy. And the day after, when they try to copy that, which they usually do, they try to do a copy paste on, it felt so good on Friday, I'll try to do exactly the same on Saturday. And then, of course, that's a flat copy.
Absolutely. Listen, we've got I want to try and bring on one more caller, but
sure.
I want to call out Steve and Joe, who in the studio, who have been with the show, I think, for most of the 9 years we've been on air. And I'm not sure which one of you tried to type Poughkeepsie and spelled it Poughkeepsy, but you've made my day. So let's go to Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm guessing there, Poughkeepsie. And let's bring on Chrissy. Chrissy, welcome to the show. And how do you spell Poughkeepsie?
It's P-O-U-G. I can't really do it off the top of my head, but is that like an E-E-I-S-E in there somewhere?
No one knows. I know. Yeah, Joe's typing on the screen. No one knows. Okay. So, what did you actually?
People living there.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's not probably technically what you called about. So, what's on your mind today, Chrissy?
Okay. Well, I just want to say that I love this conversation so much. I barely wanted to interrupt, but I am. My question is about focusing. I constantly feel inspired and have a lot of ideas about what I want to do, what I want to create. I'm able to go into the silence and receive guidance, but then I always lose motivation or just go to something else, and I can't seem to follow one thing. And the place where it affects me is in all areas of work, but right now I'm really experiencing it in my blogs, where I'll try to write a blog and I just go into about 20 different topics. So anything around focusing and picking one thing.
What do you think, Coach?
Well, I'm thinking that most of the time I get this. I'll talk about it in athletic terms because that's where I'm coming from. But I get a lot of questions about focus and sticking to it and when to know when to quit and when to keep going and so forth. But to me, focus is almost like if you ever been to a party and there's a lot of noise because everybody's talking and maybe even talking across from somebody at the table, and you can still hear them all the time. It's almost like you can have a normal conversation even though all of the craziness is going on around you. If you know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah.
If you're interested in the person or something. And that is really good focus, because it's realizing that you have free will to listen to the thinking that you have in your head, even if there's a lot of noise in there. That understanding that you feel you're thinking allows you to drop the thinking that you don't want to have. Because when you lose that energy and drive, that is just thinking about, is it worth it or is it going to be what? But you always have that knowing where you can listen to the interesting stuff. So when I have, like a golfer said to me that he had lots of voices going like, don't miss it right, don't hit it short, don't hit it long, don't do that, don't do that. But he also had that voice saying that, I really want to hit it there. And when he realized he didn't have to make all the other voices go away and that was only dropped into background noise, he could just go back to doing his best at doing what he was doing. So that, you know, having 20 things on the blog is a lot of stuff, but, you probably have one area of interest or a red thread that goes in there that way you can just stay and say, oh, I have all these things going on, but I don't have to listen to it. Just because I think it, I don't have to do anything about it. It's almost like when you think, oh, nice handbag in the window. You don't have to go in and buy it. Most of the time you walk by and you don't even know that you saw that bag 2 days later. So
I see what you're saying, but how do I don't know what to focus on and what I should just let be the background noise. How do I even decide that?
So Chrissy, it's interesting because, obviously I've been a blogger for years. I've been, I write the weekly tips at supercoach.com, and Anders writes tips too at lifevision.se, where you can see, by the way, the new TED Talk, Why Aren't We Awesomer? Supercoach.com right there on the front page. I just had to get that in a third time. I said I'd get it in three times. One of the things that I found is, well, let me ask it to you this way. What's your favorite thing about writing?
The passion and the sense of connection, I feel.
So
wisdom.
See, okay, that speaks to something that I think is there. Now, my favorite thing, if I had to say what my favorite thing about writing is, it's reading what I wrote afterwards. Because I don't know what I'm going to write till it comes out. And I think it sounds like you think you're supposed to make your decisions up front.
No, I actually can fill up pages very easily. I more come into problem when I go back to edit it. I become a mess. But writing just is very easy. It's when I go back to try and complete it. So I'll reread it and I like what I read, but it's all over the place.
Yeah. Well, let's try this. And we're coming towards the end of the show, so I'm going to have to kind of jump in a little more directly than I normally would. But
okay.
So like if somebody came to you and said, I'm really good at writing, but I'm crap at editing. Got any ideas? What might you suggest to them?
To get an editor?
Yeah, that seems easier than learning how to focus. But, that's just me. All right. Thank you for phoning in, Chrissy. I hope that actually was helpful more than facetious. I appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Anders, just as we're coming to the end of the show, I want to make sure people know how to find you. So I've mentioned, lifevision.se. They can follow you on Twitter at Anders Haglund. They can learn about our day together in Gothenburg in Sweden by going to supercoach.com/performance. Is there any other way that somebody could find you and learn more about what you do?
Well, they can always use the name because it points to the same place. So Anders Haglund, Haglund, .se works as well.
Yeah, and by the way,
kind of flows from there.
For those of you keeping score at home, Poughkeepsie is spelled Poughkeepsie. So now we know, Anders. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed this tremendously. I'm really looking forward to seeing you and Karen and teaching with you in Sweden in August. And thank you.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to having you. And thanks.
All right, everyone. Have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.